Mental health refers to our emotional, psychological, and social well-being. It affects how we think, how we feel, how we act, how we handle stress and circumstances that we come across in life, how we relate to others in our societies and in communities, as well as in our families, and how we make life decisions. It is described as more than just having a mental illness or the absence of a mental illness, but it really should be a state of complete physical, mental, and social well-being, which implies that mental health is an integral part of overall health. It's quite dynamic, mental health, because it changes over time with life circumstances. And sometimes it can be on the good end of the spectrum, and sometimes it can also be on the critical end of the spectrum. So in essence, it involves resilience, and how we balance out adversity or how we cope with adversity. And that means how we function in our lives and how we aid ourselves in getting into the good end of the spectrum. Who is at risk of being affected by mental health? With mental health, there's a universal vulnerability. This means that everyone is potentially at risk of being affected by mental health challenges. Like explained, everyone has mental health. It's like physical health. However, everyone is also at potential risk of experiencing mental health challenges. This means that no one is immune to these difficulties that can affect us. It can affect children. It can affect youth. It affects adults, the elderly, and it goes across income levels, education, race, and gender. With that being said, there are risk factors or vulnerability factors that can increase these mental health challenges or have someone experience mental health challenges. These are biological or genetic predispositions where there is a history of mental illness. There's also traumatic experiences such as abuse, neglect, violence, and major loss. There's also chronic illnesses or disability that cause mental health challenges. Substance abuse and misuse also cause these challenges. Stressful life events such as job loss, financial stress, relationship breakdowns with family or loved ones, social isolations or lack of support, poverty, inequality, and discrimination. So most things that humans go through in their lives can pose a mental health risk and mental health challenges therefore. Question three. Does mental health discriminate? E.g., people assume that if you have a good job, beautiful car, expensive clothes, you can't have mental health issues. Is that the case? No, mental health does not discriminate. In the same way that we have physical health and that physical health can deteriorate, our mental health is the same. So sometimes people assume that when you are successful or when things look good, it means that you're mentally well. But there is visible success, such as wealth and status and appearance, that leads people to believe that everything is okay and everything is fine. But internal struggles are invisible. They're intangible. And that means we cannot assume that because someone looks well, it means that they're doing well. There's also cultural narratives that often equate external markers of success with happiness or strength. So saying, well, because you've got a good job, you shouldn't have mental health challenges because you've got it all. There's also this blindness or this dissonance that people experience where we assume that because someone has advantages, they cannot or won't suffer from personal difficulties. And this is not the reality. So the reality is people who seem well off are normally suffering silently with depression, anxiety, burnout, trauma, or substance dependence. And this is not everyone, but most people are struggling through that. And sometimes high pressure environments, such as a demanding job that pays very well, can worsen the mental health strain, which is something that we cannot see. It's also saying that having resources may give more options for seeking help, but that does not mean that someone is immune to inner pain. So such assumptions are incorrect and potentially harmful because they contribute in building that stigma and that silence. Question four. What do such comments about educated or well-off people not having mental health issues tell us about society's understanding of mental health? What needs to be addressed? Or what needs to be done to address the problem? What these comments sort of tell us about society is that there might be misinformation or even just ignorance about what mental health is, you know, thinking that only the poor or the impoverished are the ones who are going to experience the struggle. There's also this understanding and underpinning that the weak is normally associated with poverty, which is not the case at all. There's also the stigma and denial, as we've spoken about, that mental health is a sign of weakness and a moral failing. And this is what society sort of upholds. And this is the idea that people have around mental health. There's stereotypes as well that mental health conditions only afflict a person or a particular type of person. And that the rich and the advantageous don't have mental issues, while the poor and the impoverished are the ones who are experiencing mental health issues. There's, again, the emphasis on appearances that says that if someone looks fine, we assume that everything is okay. And that is one of the things that we need to remove from our society. And there's a lot of consequences that come with that. You know, people who suffer may not come forward for help because they have this understanding that if I'm okay and if I've got money and if I've got everything that I need, I should not be having mental health issues. And those in seemingly privileged positions may feel shame for admitting that they are in distress or that they're experiencing a particular mental health challenge. Then again, society continues treating mental health as a less real or not a realistic factor that attributes to our integral well-being. Then what needs to be done to address the problem? So there's a number of things that we can do as society, and this needs to be a collective effort to ensure that the stigma is lessened and that people feel free and comfortable to speak about their mental health challenges. This means having education and awareness programs to clarify what mental health is and what it looks like, and that it is universal and is not discriminatory. To also use real stories to say, people who look like me or I have experienced similar things, to humanize mental illness and to not remove it from the human aspect. The second thing that needs to be done is to normalize conversations, is to have open conversations about mental health, and that open dialogue not just discusses physical issues, but also discusses mental health issues that come along with circumstances and challenges that people may experience. It's promoting language that separates people from the illness. So not being diagnostic when it is that we speak about mental health, but very encouraging, very empathetic about what we say and how we receive the information that we receive about mental health. The third thing that we can do is to also challenge the stigma very actively, is to call out harmful statements, conversations, jokes, and dialogue about mental health, not using this as a pun or a joke to target someone, but actually saying that this is a serious issue and we need to look into it. It is to train media to portray mental health responsibly, especially when using social media. We need to call out such behavior and say, well, this is not the right way to address it, and there is a particular way to address it. So then foster inclusive policies in workplace, schools, institutions to protect mental health and support people who are in distress. The fourth thing that can be done is to increase access to care and support, is to ensure that we are expanding mental health services, especially in underserved communities. And this calls to everyone involved, the government included, to say we need to expand mental health services so that everybody has access to having these mental health challenges addressed. It's to reduce barriers such as cost, distance, stigma, as well as waiting times to access mental health assistance. It is to also provide psychological first aid, counseling, and peer support. And this needs to be all rounded within societies and communities to ensure that any and everyone that you reach out to and speak to can provide a form of counseling that helps one to look further for help and to ensure that their mental health is taken care of. So question five, signs to look out for in someone who is in distress. There is no a single checklist that applies to everyone, but there are a number of red flags that we can look at to indicate that someone might be struggling. And at first, it's normally the one that we see the most, which is emotional and psychological signs. So when we realize that someone is persistently sad or is very tearful, we might want to ask if they are okay and if they need to speak about something. It's also being very irritable, having mood swings or outbursts of anger can also show us that someone is experiencing mental health challenges. So feelings of hopelessness, worthlessness and guilt, having panic attacks, excessive worry about something, the loss of interest in pleasure and in previously enjoyed activities, as well as withdrawing from social interactions. Then there's the cognitive signs, which might be a bit difficult to see, but are definitely there. So it is difficulty in concentrating and making decisions, which is a part of mental health, confusion and slowed thinking, self-criticism and negative self-talk, or recurrent thoughts of death, as well as suicidal ideation. Then we've also got the behavioral, or the things that we can actively see. So this includes how we behave, our physical changes and signs, as well as our social signs. So this includes changes in appetite or weight, changes in the way that we sleep and our sleeping patterns, feeling very fatigued and low energy, being restless or being very, very agitated. And then there's an increased usage of substances and the dependency thereof. It's also avoiding a lot of things like isolating from your friends, isolating yourself from work, or even just teamwork where needed. Then there's the physical signs, as mentioned, so aches and pains without a clear medical cause or direction as to what this may be caused by. It's digestive issues such as headaches, neck pain, back pain that we cannot explain. Then there's the weight change as well that can explain that there might be a mental health challenge. And then it's also conflict in relationships where we're irritable with loved ones and with the ones that we are very close to, withdrawing from family as well as social groups, and difficulty coping with normal life stresses. So something that we would be able to deal with, such as load shedding, becomes an arduous task for us to deal with when there's a mental health challenge that has been posed. Question 6. What role can people, family, friends, community play in fighting the stigmatization of people battling mental health? This is a very critical role, and it's a very important role that we need to take responsibility for and act out to the ones that we love. This makes the difference between isolation and recovery. So what can family, friends, and community do? It is to listen with compassion and without judgment. It's to give people the space to speak without feeling like you need to give immediate advice or to try and fix what it is that they're going through. At times, people just want to feel validated. They want to feel seen. They want to feel acknowledged. And when we dismiss them, we remove that safe space that we could be creating for them. It's to show acceptance and support, to say, I will not judge you. I will not sit and say this is how we can fix it. Instead, ask, how can I help you? Rather than assuming that someone can fix it themselves. It's also being very consistent and making sure that you provide them with these small gestures to ensure that they know and understand that you are there and that you see them. It is very important to educate ourselves about mental health, to learn about it, the types of illness, the types of treatments, so that when we or others are experiencing mental health challenges, we may have a way to assist them. It's also to share accurate information in social media platforms or in social circles to ensure that everybody gets the information that we are trying to circulate. Again, speaking up about the stigma or speaking against it, challenging derogatory remarks or jokes about mental illness that happen normally in discourse with our friends, with our families, and in our communities. It is also to facilitate help. So ensuring that the person who's experiencing mental health issues finds professional resources such as counselors, organizations like SADAG, psychologists, as well as clinics. It is to also then offer community groups or peer support, like a support group where people can go and they can actually feel like they can relate to others who've experienced the same thing. And then lastly, to normalize self-care and mental wellness. It is to talk about your own stresses, to cope and how you cope about them, as well as wellness practices that you do and enforce in your life to ensure that we stay on the good end of the spectrum when it comes to mental health.